Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gramling, and in just a moment, I'll be joined by a very special guest host. Obviously, there are much more important things going on in the world than what we'll be talking about on this show. I hope you're taking care of yourselves and your loved ones and your friends and your neighbors by limiting your interactions with them. I know the pandemic is affecting everyone, our friends in the U.S., our friends overseas, maybe not our listeners on the International Space Station, and this show has always been very big on the International Space Station. But with that said, it's been a busy 2 days in the NFL, and thus we move on to my questionable takes that will once again be balanced out by the wonderful takes of my friend and our very special guest, Andy Benoit. Andy, how are you?
Hey, Gary, I'm doing well. How are you? You started coughing before we hit record here. I jumped out of my seat.
I explained it was, I think we're okay. We have not left the house, and Friday morning I had to run a quick errand. That was the last
time
I was out. Yeah, wow. everyone's the kids had school canceled on Friday. They're out for the next 2 weeks. And none of them have, between my three kids and my wife, no one's been outside the house since Thursday afternoon. Just me. Oh,
very good. I'm happy for you.
But as I pointed out, the problem was I exercised, I jogged, and that was a little too much for me to take when you've been basically sedentary for, I don't know, 6 months.
Yeah, it's a different lifestyle right now. But we've got this free agency stuff to hold us over.
We do. We kind of surprised it started, but it's going on, and obviously a ton of stuff going on here between Sunday and Monday. And we will start with it was stunning. I mean, that's all I can say. There were whispers that came out afterwards that Bill O'Brien and DeAndre Hopkins were kind of on the outs, and we don't know exactly what was going on there. But for Hopkins to get traded was a shock, but the return. I don't know. David Johnson seemed like he was going to be a salary dump for someone. It seemed like they were going to have to do like an Osweiler to the Browns type deal to get out from under the deal. And basically the Texans end up getting David Johnson and a second. So, you know, even if you're saying David Johnson is, and he's probably a good fit, but boy, it's not much of a return for DeAndre Hopkins, right?
It doesn't feel to be. Yeah, that's my initial reaction as well. So, Bill O'Brien, let's cover the David Johnson part for a second. Bill O'Brien's offense last season flexed into empty formations more than any other offense in the NFL. And I think that was true the year before as well. Mm-hmm. So they go to these spread empty formations. And one thing they do very often is put the running back in motion out on the weak side of the formation. That's what the Saints do with Alvin Kamara. It's what the Steelers used to do a lot with Le'Veon Bell. When you have a dynamic receiving back there, that formation becomes very potent. So Johnson gives him a little bit of that element, perhaps. A few years ago, he gave Arizona that element for sure. He often went to the slot in these cases. Mm-hmm. One thing that, you know, they had Duke Johnson already, though, on the roster.
Yes.
And he was viable in that role. So it's, unless they plan on putting both those guys on the field together, and maybe they do, more teams are starting to do that. I don't know if that gives you a huge advantage, though. Defense has just played nickel against it, and it really doesn't change the makeup of an offense versus defense a whole lot. I'm trying to understand what the role is here for David Johnson. Clearly, O'Brien feels that they're going to get the David Johnson that the Cardinals had a few years ago. Mm-hmm. The one we saw last year, that guy looked sluggish on film, to put it boldly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm still kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. Obviously, there's plenty of time. We're still in the quote-unquote tampering period. None of these moves are official till Wednesday. Moving Hopkins does open up some money beyond 2020 here. They paid David Johnson a lot this year, but they can get out from under that deal after the season. But I don't know. It's a receiver rich draft, you're not getting a guy in the second round who can equal what you're getting from DeAndre Hopkins.
Oh, and there were a lot of cases where Hopkins, that offense has run through him, and he's the bailout guy. I mean, we don't need to go over how great DeAndre Hopkins is. So there must be more on the horizon with this move, or more back behind us that we're not privy to understanding. Remember, Bill O'Brien, he knows Hopkins better than any other head coach or general manager knows Hopkins right now. So maybe there's more than what meets the eye. It almost feels like there has to be on this one.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens next year with Houston. But obviously the Cardinals get to, you know, they need guys who can win one-on-one in that air raid offense. And obviously this is a guy who can do it.
It is a guy who can do it. Of course, it's a guy who can do it. You can put him anywhere in the formation. He'll probably Larry Fitzgerald, he's coming back this year, right? And he had his annual I'm coming back announcement yet, or are we still waiting on him? I lose track every year.
Yep. No, he's coming back. So it'll be Hopkins, Fitzgerald, and Christian Kirk there.
What's always bothered me a little bit about Arizona's receiving core always being this past year is a lot of the guys are similar to one another. They're stylistically, they're almost all the same. And I don't think Hopkins changes that a whole lot. It's not a fast receiving core. Now, it doesn't mean it's not a good one. And Hopkins can still win downfield because he's so unbelievable at winning when the ball's in the air. He doesn't have to run by people to make big plays downfield. But the reason I asked about Fitzgerald is he's their slot guy. Mm-hmm. I wonder if we're going to see more of the four wide receiver concepts that we saw early last season from Cliff Kingsbury, because Hopkins, you could argue, is at his best in the slot as well. And if you go four wide, you can put both of those guys in the slot. So that's one thing you wonder about. But, you know, as last season progressed, they went with more tight end personnel, multi-tight end, certainly at least one tight end on the field, because I think Kingsbury understood you just don't have enough dimension with your running game to go with four wide. And they did also just tag Kenyon Drake. So obviously they value some part, and he gives them more than just running the ball, but they obviously value some part of their running game as well. So it's a good offense. It's a better offense than it was at this time a week ago. It's not a perfect offense, and they've still got some things to put together and sort out, and that's what this time of year is for. They'll get that figured out this offseason.
All right. Well, let's go to the other big trade of the day, and that's DeForest Buckner goes to the Indianapolis Colts for the first-round pick, the 13th overall pick in April's draft. I mean, look, Buckner's a guy we both love, and the 49ers, I guess, had something of a decision here between Buckner and Eric Armstead. Eric Armstead's a free agent now. Buckner was going to be a free agent. It's reported he's going to get a new deal here from the Colts once this trade is consummated. But DeForest Buckner and this fit in Indianapolis, let's start with that because it seems like a pretty perfect marriage here.
Yeah, it does. That deal you just referenced, that's going to be reportedly at $21 million a year on average, which is just shy of Aaron Donald money. And that's a huge number to pay a defensive tackle, but it's all relative. Indianapolis has that kind of cap space available. They've got the spending available for that. They have a lot of young guys on defense, so they can afford to do this. San Francisco could not, and that was basically the long and short of it. The Niners decided they'd rather have Eric Armstead at $17 million a year, plus they get Indy's first-round pick, than keeping DeForest Buckner. The option A outweighed option B, and that's a tough one there because Buckner is a sensational player. I think this was the best move for both sides, though, Gary. And I think it's a true 4-3 scheme in Indianapolis. They do a lot more than just basic 4-3 zone concepts, but for the way they play up front, it's a true four-down front, one-gap penetrating defense. And Buckner, he's good. He's going to fit whatever you do. He'd be good in a 3-4 as a defensive end, too, and he did that early in his career. But Buckner's going to fit that 4-3 extremely well.
Yeah, and the 49ers, as you mentioned, they re-sign Eric Armstead. They were very light on draft capital, so not only can they, obviously they add a pick in the first half of the first round, but if they want to basically, you know, go the depth route, I'm sure they could trade that 13 pick and pick up a slew of picks later in the draft here. But seems like it just makes a ton of sense for them. And Eric Armstead, who was kind of something of a forgotten guy a little bit going into last year, and then really had his best season.
He did. Absolutely had his best season. He's similar to Buckner. He might be the only guy in the league besides Calais Campbell who's truly similar in style to Buckner. Long-bodied, long-armed guys, excellent strength. I think what stands out on some of Armstead's best plays last year is there's a mechanical soundness to the way he plays as well. You know, guys that have breakout seasons in their contract year, you wonder a little bit about that. Fifth year in the league, breakout season, contract year. Obviously, the Niners, who know Armstead better than any of us, they weren't too worried about that. The other thing that's interesting is Solomon Thomas is still on the roster. He has not lived up to his, what, number two overall pick? That's what he was, two or three?
Number three.
Yeah, because they moved back. He would have been two if they didn't trade with the Bears for the Trubisky deal. But, you know, he has not been that kind of a performer, but he's a high-energy guy. He'll probably play a lot more in their sub-package defensive tackle situations now, or at least he'll get an opportunity to. The other guy, Gary, and I think he tore his ACL late in the year, so maybe it didn't factor in a whole lot here, but if Julian Taylor's healthy, seventh-round pick in 2018, he gives the Niners a lot of depth as well. So they have some options at defensive tackle. DJ Jones is a good player as well. They had the depth to absorb this move at defensive tackle.
All right, let's go out to Cleveland. Hunter Henry got tagged by the Chargers, and that really left Austin Hooper as kind of your only option at tight end if you're looking around the league and want sort of a top flight guy here. It's not a deep draft. It's not a good draft. There might not be a first round tight end in this year's class. Hooper was really the only game in town, and plenty of teams were interested, and the Browns end up coming away with him. I mean, what do you think, Andy? You know, Stefanski obviously used a lot of two tight end stuff in Minnesota. You know, Irv Smith as the second tight end there played like 60% of the snaps. It seems like there's room for both an Austin Hooper and a David Njoku in this offense.
Oh, I think there is technically. I'm not so sure the Browns aren't going to move on from Njoku one way or the other at some point here. It's a different regime than that's been there before, though, and that probably actually helps Njoku, to be quite honest with you. He has a reputation to repair there in Cleveland based on what you kind of hear behind the scenes and what we've heard in front of the scenes as well. It's been an up and down start to his career. Two tight ends will likely be on the field. Two tight ends or two backs. One of those guys has to be a flexible, movable type of piece. And Irv Smith, who you referenced, that was who it was for Stefanski last year in Minnesota. Kyle Rudolph was the inline tight end. I would imagine Hooper can play either way. He was a little bit flexible in Atlanta with what they did. So that's probably what they valued there, is it's a multi-dimensional tight end. I don't know if he changes the face of your offense, but you're not looking to change the face of your offense. You know what you want to build offensively. You're looking to plug in the type of guys who fit, and Hooper certainly does. And what Stefanski runs, different terminology, I would guess, but similar in style to what Hooper did under Kyle Shanahan and Hooper's rookie 2016 season with Atlanta.
So the Falcons lose Austin Hooper. They end up going and trading a second-round pick, a couple more picks swapped in this, but getting Hayden Hurst from Baltimore. Hayden Hurst obviously had tumbled down that depth chart a little bit. I don't know. I mean, someone's got to play it in Atlanta, and I guess they're going to roll the dice here on a bit of a reclamation
project. Well, and I think, I think Hurst can be better than he has been in Baltimore. I think he's a pretty good talent right now. I totally understand why Atlanta would do this. And to be honest, if you said you could have Hayden Hurst or Austin Hooper the next couple years for the same price, that to me, I'm not sure that's an easy decision to make. I think Hooper's probably certainly more refined now, and you probably do go that direction. But Hayden Hurst on a rookie deal with the upside that he has, I think this is a great move for the Falcons.
And Andy, as we tape here, the Browns add another big free agent signing here, Jack Conklin, who, you know, we talked about. He was a fascinating case as a guy who, you know, really strong rookie year, fell off, got injured, didn't have his fifth-year option picked up in Tennessee, and now he gets away from the Titans, and the Browns pick up. I mean, look, whether Conklin is pretty good or great, it's hard to find pretty good offensive linemen on the open market these days.
Yeah, sure, it absolutely is. It looks like, according to Ryan Taylor, who's sending me this information, 3 years, $42 million, $30 million guaranteed. It'd be interesting to see what side of the line they plan to play him on, because they need a left tackle, and Conklin has been a right tackle, and quite frankly, I wouldn't mess with that if I were I would put him at right tackle, because it took him until last year to really get fully comfortable with his mechanics and his approach to the game. I would want to have him build on that comfort, and that outside zone type of scheme they ran in Tennessee, that's what Stefanski runs. So kind of, it's another case of a good scheme fit here for Cleveland.
And I should have mentioned when we talked Colts a little bit earlier, Anthony Costanzo gets a 2-year deal. I guess he was considering retirement. Instead, he stays in Indianapolis on a 2-year deal as their left tackle, which, you know, I'm sure the Colts are thrilled about.
Well, because he was tremendous last season. And whether it's Jacoby Brissett or somebody else, maybe a Phillip Rivers at QB, it's going to be a pocket passing quarterback. And we've had discussions on this show a lot, Gary, about how, well, what's the value of a left tackle? Depends on your scheme. In Indianapolis's scheme, the value is legitimate. That left tackle is an important position, and it is worth paying the premium for. So getting Costanzo there, and he's really, I think he's at the height of his career performance-wise. I can absolutely understand why they wanted him back.
All right, more signings to go here. We have Nick Kwiatkowski, the sort of the odd man out in Chicago, just because they did re-sign Danny Trevathan. Obviously, Roquan Smith is a high draft pick that's there. Kwiatkowski got on the field a lot last year and was quite good, and now he is going to get a chance to go out to Las Vegas and sort of anchor this this Raiders linebacking core.
He was very good. I think he's been the best backup linebacker in the NFL over the last several seasons, certainly the last 2 or 3 seasons. So I get why the Raiders would want to sign him and make him a starter, and I think he's ready for that. They might need one. Who's their other? I guess it's Markell Lee is their other linebacker there. They do like to rotate as well. So they like to play guys based on their packages. Nicholas Morrell is their other starting backer. Markell Lee will probably play sub packages. They might need one more piece here, Gary, to really round out this linebacking core. But this is a good move. This is absolutely a good move for them. And it's nice to see a guy like Kwiatkowski get paid. He earned that money.
All right, let's go down to Miami. Miami, you know, they cleared the books, whatever you want to call it, last season. And now they are starting to spend some of that money. Shaq Lawson from Buffalo, let's start with him. I mean, look, he's a guy who's popped up on the show a couple times over the years. You know, he is a former first-round pick. I don't know. How does he fit in a Brian Flores offense? Because we've talked about it a lot. He's an edge player. He's not an edge burner, though.
No, he's not. Believe it or not, Kier, I've actually been spending today when I'm not looking at Twitter. I've been watching that Brian Flores defense on film. I'm going back through some of the Dolphins film from late last year. They need guys. They badly need some pass rushing juice. We could debate whether Lawson's the guy that provides it. He was certainly better last season than he's been. You don't get the sense that Buffalo made much effort, if any, to re-sign him. And one thing that did stand out watching Bills film is I thought Lawson last year, and it's, look, these are energy plays. It's effort that counts, and it's a big deal, and you appreciate that. I don't how much do you pay a guy for that, though? I thought Lawson, his numbers, I've never seen a guy get so many plays just based off of circumstances, with sacks kind of presenting themselves to him, tackles for loss presenting themselves. It was uncanny down the stretch. Shaq Lawson, a lot of the times, was in the right place at the right time, and I imagine Buffalo understood that when they decided whether to let him leave.
And the one that will raise a lot of eyebrows is Eric Flowers. And look, I'm not gonna sit here and say Eric Flowers is secretly great. Obviously, he has a reputation from his years as a bust left tackle with the Giants. He went down to Jacksonville and was kind of serviceable late season for the Jaguars, and then he was pretty okay for the for Washington last year. I don't know if anyone expected this type of money for him just because of his reputation, but you know, he was starter caliber.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he was. He played pretty well for Washington. I guess Michael Dieter then for the third round pick for Miami last year, he started a left guard. I don't know if he's moving to right guard or if they'll move Flowers over there. Flowers has to be a guard. You're not signing him to play tackle no matter what side. He's not a right tackle or a left tackle. He's been better at guard. Well, it would be interesting to see what they do there inside. But the Dolphins, they had some issues. They had a lot of issues with their offensive line, especially in terms of depth as well. So when you sign a new starter, depending on what you have roster-wise, in their case, you're getting some of your backups now, or some of your former starters now become backups, so you get a quality backup out of that. Like a Deion Calhoun was who played at right tackle or right guard quite a bit for the Dolphins last year. He'll probably now come off the bench. That upgrades what they had on the bench in theory.
All right, Andy, they still play with quarterbacks in this league. Let's go over some of the quarterback news here. We'll start in, you know, okay, well, let's start in Tennessee. Well, let's start with the more positive news. Ryan Tannehill gets a deal that it's being presented as 4 years, 118. I believe in the numbers. Really, it's a 2 year deal for, you know, somewhere in the upper 20s, and then they'll be able to get out from under if they want to after two seasons. But you know, I had sort of said I thought he was perfect with the franchise tag. Instead, they put the franchise tag on Derrick Henry, and we'll see how that plays out. But they're making a medium term commitment to Ryan Tannehill as their guy.
Which is probably all that they had to make. If you're Tannehill, you're in a good spot. Look where he was a year ago and look where he is now. So you take the money and the bird in the hand, especially in a year that has some good quarterbacks in the draft and a couple of really big-name QBs on the open market. Tannehill very well may have been the third quarterback on most other teams' lists. So to get top 10 quarterback annual money a year, given where he was, that's to me, that's a no-brainer for him. Yeah, it's only two seasons long, but you're betting on yourself. And Ryan Tannehill, we've said again and again, he was every bit as good on film last year as he was on paper. Those were real numbers he was putting up. It was a well-designed offense, and he was the guy running it. Derrick Henry, I imagine they did that, and Henry is certainly a guy you want to keep. Given how running back contracts have gone for other teams, I imagine they're just viewing Henry as a one-year trial-by-season kind of deal, wouldn't you think?
I think they'd like to. I mean, Derrick Henry has been saying he wants Ezekiel Elliott money. And I think
I understand why he would say that. Yeah, I would understand that.
I just think, unfortunately for him, these teams who have paid Ezekiel Elliott money, we'll get to a team that did pay Ezekiel Elliott that money, it has not worked out. Sometimes it's been disastrous. Sometimes it's just been sort of disappointing. But it's just not working out for those teams.
It's not. So it's kick the can down the road with the running back. If you wind up overpaying a little bit over a three-year span, let's say they franchise tag him again, and then they want to re-sign him after that, highly unlikely, but that's the worst case scenario financially for him. You can live with that, because if you're in that position, it means he carried your offense and dominated. So it's a good problem to have down the road. And if he doesn't continue to carry the offense, you don't have any problem at all, because you'll just go with someone else. That's the nature of the running back position. So it makes perfect sense from Tennessee's standpoint why they would do this. And Henry franchise tagged, but you know, the new CBA, it punishes holdouts even more. Does that apply to franchise tag players? I guess it wouldn't, would it? Because if you don't sign the franchise tag, you're actually not holding out from anything yet. So Henry, Henry, if he wants to play hardball, he could play hardball here too.
Yep, and we'll see how this plays out. Dallas, they did it. They got the deal done. Blake Jarwin is in the books. That's all anyone cares about down there. Let's start with Blake Jarwin. It's not a monster deal. It's, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it was a very thin tight end market here. Blake Jarwin is there as, I guess, the de facto number one tight end in Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. And he's a solid player within the context of the offense. If they don't get Amari Cooper back, the context of that offense might have to change. And that's what Blake Jarwin is to me. I don't think he's a mismatch-making piece or anyone you design around, but I know there's a lot of times where you see the offense operating on schedule, and you used to be, I'd check the depth chart. Who's 89? Eventually, I finally remembered him. It's always Blake. Okay, it's Blake Jarwin. Nice play. On to the next snap.
Dak Prescott gets tagged, and Amari Cooper still working on a deal. I guess he's free to sign with whomever he would like at this point, but still working on those two deals, seemingly forever. I would expect both guys would get some sort of long-term deal. People have thrown out maybe Dak just plays under the tag this year, and then next year he's in for a monster contract. I don't know. I mean, he did just play a season for, you know, basically a six-figure salary. Maybe that is something that appeals to him, but this is not how it was supposed to work out there.
It's not. And I understand. I mean, so we agree. We understand why Dallas tagged him, right? You're not going to let him walk out the door.
Yeah.
So if they didn't have the long-term deal done, that was their only move and their only available option. If they lose Amari Cooper, Gary, they are awfully thin at their skill positions. It's basically Ezekiel Elliott and Michael Gallup.
Mm-hmm.
That they're probably not sitting around making that the plan. Hey, let's see how thin we can get. But if it goes that way, we're going to learn a lot more about Dak Prescott this year. So, I'm not dragging the Cowboys through the raking them over the coals about this the way a lot of other people are. I don't think it's a huge blunder to not have the deal done with Prescott at this point.
Okay. We will stay calm about it then.
Am I missing something? I guess people don't like it because it puts them at risk for losing Cooper. Is that the thinking there?
Yeah. I mean, look, Cooper said he wants to be back there. We'll see if they get it done. I think the issue is, and look, Connor Orr wrote about it back in September, and when we did that article back in September, it was the cover story for Sports Illustrated about, Dallas's sort of unique negotiating tactics. We were kind of worried when we finished that story. We were like, oh, what if Dak gets his extension in that, 72-hour period after the magazine is closed, but before it comes out, and now we are, I don't know the math, 6 months later, and we're still not done with the deal here. But usually the Cowboys end up paying pretty close to market value when you get to the end of these sort of prolonged ones. Some guys take discounts early, and the argument they always make is power of the star, and you're worth this much more because you play here. With Dak, I mean, he's already sort of an established pitch man. I'm sure there are some cities he could go to and really devalue himself off the field, but probably not a whole lot. So I don't know how much the value of the star really does for him at this point. But yeah, I don't know. It just seems like, again, it might just be Jerry Jones loves the theater of the negotiations and he loves providing fodder for NFL Network and all this stuff. But it seems like this one just sort of got away from them a little bit. It feels like it.
Well, let's also keep in mind if we're all assuming that the deal's okay, you want to retain Cooper, you need to retain Cooper, so better get the Prescott deal done so you can focus on Cooper. And Cooper's a great player. He's been a difference maker in Dallas. There's no question about it. What's also true, and the Cowboys have said it differently, but what appears to be true last year, Cooper was benched down the stretch in their biggest game of the season last mm-hmm. year against Philadelphia. He was not playing well in that game, and he was off the field in some big moments, and it was not just a simple rotation because that's not how the rest of the game had played out. They weren't rotating wide receivers, and now it's Tavon Austin's turn to be in there. Austin replaced Cooper in meaningful snaps. How many other true number one receivers does that happen with? So what I'm saying is they might not be as high on. I think I'm sure they want Cooper back, and they see the numbers, and they know how much better their offense was when he was in there. But Cooper's camp surely is asking for Julio Jones type money. That's got to be where their starting place is.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas might not, I'm sure they don't see him as a Julio Jones type. There might not be another guy in the league right like that right now. But Dallas might see him as a whole class below that.
Yeah. I guess I wouldn't be surprised by it. I guess the other thing you're going to look at, and, this is the wrong way of thinking about it, but how sort of pot committed are the Cowboys after spending that first round pick to get Amari Cooper? And if you end up having him for just a season and a half in which you, they won one playoff game, but they didn't get past the divisional round at a time when they see themselves as Super Bowl contenders. I don't know. I don't know if you sleep well about that.
You don't, but that's a sunk cost as well.
Yep.
And business school 101. So yeah. You also have, for what it's worth, you have a lot of guys on defense you have to deal with. They're probably losing Byron Jones, Robert Quinn, and Malik Collins are free agents that we've talked about. But other guys are coming up for deals at some point. Leighton Vander Esch will be up for a deal at some point a little bit down the road. Do they want to keep Awuzie at cornerback? I mean, it's I don't know. It's tough. You know, boy, the more I look at their depth chart on defense, that's what's not getting talked about in Dallas. Maybe they haven't signed Cooper because they don't want anybody to notice that half their defense is walking out the door right now.
Yeah. They got some. They got some work to do in Dallas.
Yeah.
Beyond
they had
the headliners.
Work to do. They have a lot of. I mean, that defense is getting. If they lose a guy, it's right now. It's Malik Collins, Robert Quinn, Michael Bennett, Christian Covington on the D line are free agents. Sean Lee, a linebacker, is a free agent. Joe Thomas, he played in some of their sub packages, free agent. And then top corners, Byron Jones, and I think Anthony Brown's their best slot corner. He's a free agent, as are Kevon Frazier and Jeff Heath. I mean, we're naming. This is more than half the guys who play on defense for them.
Yeah. Well, let's stay on the defensive side of the ball, but let's talk about happier things. Let's go out to Baltimore, where the Ravens bring in Calais Campbell. The Jaguars obviously selling off some of their big salary guys as they enter something of a mini rebuild here, or possibly a very large rebuild. But the Ravens end up, last year, the trade deadline, they flip a fifth rounder for Marcus Peters. Now they flip a fifth rounder for Calais Campbell, who, he can still play, and he fits very well in this defense.
Absolutely, he does. They move. It's not an overly versatile defense in terms of how they use their D linemen. In other words, they're not going to put a guy at nose tackle one play and then rush him off the wide edge on the next play. But there's a lot of subtleties in the way they move and position their defensive linemen. They don't line up in the same technique snap after snap. Sometimes you're over the guard. Sometimes you're shaded over the guard. Other times you're directly over the tackle. Whatever it is, it's a subtly versatile defensive line there in Baltimore. And I can't think of a better veteran player to fill that kind of a role than Calais Campbell.
And I believe they're flipping a fifth rounder that came in the Austin Hooper deal down to Jacksonville in this one. Although they have an extra fifth rounder for the great Kari Vedvik last year, the bidding war they created for him that sort of blew everyone's minds. But
Eric DaCosta's done a nice job there with the trades and getting veteran players. There's no doubt about that. And to their credit, they've also kind of, and this praises the Peters trade a little bit more, but they've revamped their identity on the fly. They realize we don't have a lot of pass rushers. Now, that changes a little bit with Campbell there, but we are not overflowing by any stretch with pass rushers. Even if Matt Judon's back, they don't have a dominant four-man rush. At least they didn't before Campbell. So what have they done? Let's invest in our secondary. We have a great corner, Marlon Humphrey, who can play anywhere. Brandon Carr can cover tight ends now. We did have Jimmy Smith. I would imagine they'd like him back at a certain price. And they get Marcus Peters. I mean, they are overflowing with man-to-man corners, and they realize if we have that, then we can blitz. And nobody blitzed more than Baltimore last year. So great job with the front office and the coaching staff being flexible as time moved along, catering to what they had in their personnel, because they had good players. They just weren't distributed in a traditional way across the defense.
Yeah. And look, this is a defense that didn't take the ball away a whole lot in 2018, and it looked like they really addressed that over the last now year and a half. And as you mentioned, they put the franchise tag on Matt Judon, friend of the show.
He does not remember being on our show. No, I would be very surprised if he remembers being on our show.
That's all right. He wears the label. You wear the label forever once you get it. Judon, look, the MO for the Ravens over the years has been to let a lot of these guys walk and then collect the compensatory picks. And I thought it was, a lot of people were hinting it was coming, but I thought it was a pleasant surprise to see them, at the moment, we believe, retain Judon.
Well, because I don't think he's a pure edge bender, and I don't think they would say he is either. He's a very good player. Those blitzes we talked about, he was often the focal point of the blitz. He moved all over, especially when they went to their dime package, six defensive backs on the field. Judon lined up in a number of different spots, and he was almost always the main feature of whatever pass rush design they had from that. So that's why they want that known entity back, because if you lose that, you can maybe do that with someone else, but you don't know that for sure. And a veteran mind like Judon, it's a lot easier to do that with him than a younger guy who's just getting his feet under him, like a Jalen Ferguson, for example.
And speaking of compensatory picks games, the Packers take full advantage. They end up signing Christian Kirksey, the linebacker, and right tackle Rick Wagner. Presumably that means Blake Martinez and Brian Bulaga are out. And of course, because those guys were cuts from other teams who were on the market, it does not factor into the Packers' compensatory pick calculation next year. Kirksey for Martinez and Wagner for Bulaga. Downgrade, I would think slight downgrade Bulaga to Wagner. I'm not so sure about Kirksey Martinez. Kirksey's got to stay healthy and on the field, obviously, but I kind of think I might like Kirksey just as much as I like Blake Martinez, maybe a little more.
I agree with you. I think that's an upgrade at that position. And Martinez has been a very solid player for them. Kirksey can run. Kirksey's a good linebacker. He can run. He can cover man-to-man, especially if he's covering a running back instead of a tight end. And I imagine that will be the case often because Green Bay always, not always, but very often has a sixth defensive back on the field. They play a lot of dime. They'll play dime against running teams at times and just trust their safeties to play the run. So Kirksey to me is an upgrade there. That's a really good signing for the Packers, especially with what you explained about those compensatory picks.
Yannick Ngakoue gets tagged in Jacksonville. It seems almost certain they are going to trade him. Seems like the water has been poisoned there for quite some time. 24-year-old, you know, edge bending edge rusher here, disruptive guy. I would presume they would get something potentially in the range of like what Frank Clark got a year ago from Kansas City.
That's a good comp. Yeah, that's a really good comp. Because I was just trying to think in my head, all right, where does Ngakoue rank relative to DeForest Buckner? And I think that's close. Ngakoue plays a little bit more of a more valuable position, I think, in the eyes of many teams. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I see it that way, but a lot we're talking market value. So what matters is how a lot of teams see. And I'm with you. I think Ngakoue, why would they – is there any reason the Jags would hold on to Ngakoue right now? Let's first just cover our bases there.
Well, he's young. If they could get him, you know, now that they've cleared out a couple of the big contracts, you could sort of say like, okay, well, they probably have room for one big deal at this point. And if they gave it to him, you wouldn't really blame them. I mean, the guy's probably, you know, at age 24, you can be pretty sure that 3 years from now, he'll still be in his prime. But you know, it's the relationship was very much soured with the negotiations that it just immediately fizzled out last year. And I think he's just wanted out of there for a while.
Well, and they just gave in to another guy that did that to them, and Jalen Ramsey as well. So you wonder a little bit about the optics of the culture there. The other thing is they have to understand what scheme are they running. And Todd Wash is back in defensive coordinator, so it's that going to be that Seahawks style, that old Seahawks style cover three mm-hmm. that they've been running. I would imagine the front office has certainly not said this, but I would imagine that a coaching staff's on the hot seat, and if they go 5-11, they might be changing entire coaching staffs. If that's the case, then Ngakoue, he's a scheme fit type of player. I mean, he can transcend scheme because he's so gifted. But if we're talking high end money, which is what he's at this point in his career, you got to make that decision about him. Then you want him in the ideal scheme. And that 4-3 weak side pass rusher role that he plays, that's the ideal fit for him. If you went to a 3-4, for example, if you hired someone that did that, you know, Ngakoue is not the same asset there. So that, I wonder if that factors in or not with the guy, with the guys making these decisions. I assume it's Dave Caldwell, then it's his call with Tom Coughlin now out of the picture.
Let's go with the Lions here. Another late breaking one, Andy. This is, Halapulatuvatai.
Yep.
Did I get it almost?
You got, we are 70 number, what is he for the Eagles? A backup to 72, I believe it is.
So 72. I think you're right. I was going to say 78, but I think 72. Vitae goes to the Lions.
Yeah, I've always just said Vitae. Yeah.
5-year deal for the Lions. So he was swing tackle in Philadelphia. And by the way, I do apologize for butchering his first name, but I never have to say it. he goes to Detroit, where he presumably just slides right in for Rick Wagner there. They've tried for the past 4 or 5 years to build up that offensive line in Detroit and hasn't really come together to this point. So another crack at it here with Vitae.
Do you know what, have we learned yet what kind of money he's getting?
Adam Kaplan had it at 5 years, $50 million, but no other details at the moment.
All right, that's a lot of money for a guy that's been a backup tackle the last couple years, last few years, really his whole career.
Yeah.
So I need some time to digest that one. Obviously, Detroit's done a lot more research on it than I have, and they knew what they had in Rick Wagner. So that's a huge investment, though. I'm guessing. It sounds like it's a huge investment.
Tampa, Shaq Barrett gets tagged. We all thought he'd be retained one way or another. Jason Pierre-Paul, though, gets a pretty significant deal down there to stay in Tampa. I don't know. Seems like it makes sense, even if it's not the most exciting signing.
Pierre-Paul's gotten a lot of incremental signings in his career, and it's gone well for him, and he's earned that. You know, he keeps earning these contracts. Mm-hmm. He's a good player for them. He can move laterally. He's strong. He plays with leverage. I think he's not an edge bender in and of himself, snap after snap, but he's capable of doing that. So I understand why the Bucks would want him back, and he's kind of become a little bit scheme versatile too. He's not just a 4-3 defensive end. He really never was. He has some. You can do a lot of things with him in a lot of different systems. So that's a good move by Tampa Bay.
And speaking of Tampa Bay, seems like they are the number one sort of competitor with the Patriots here for Tom Brady's services. On the last show, we talked a little bit about a potential Titans Brady marriage, which obviously is no longer going to happen. But it seems like it's down to the Patriots and Bucks at this point. Does that make sense for the Bucks to you?
Well, what happened to the Raiders? I heard the Raiders for so long, and then all of a sudden nobody thinks the Raiders anymore.
I think the Raiders and Chargers are sort of the long shots here. I mean, look, a lot of people are reporting the Raiders are out. A couple of people on our staff think the Raiders were very much in a couple of weeks ago, and we'll see if they are really in or not.
Yeah. You know, one thing that occurred to me about Brady to the Titans later is Tennessee, they're committed to the outside zone, the stretch zone game. That's their offense. And we said they would tailor the offense to Brady if he came. That's a big adjustment. So instead of doing that, they decide they want to go outside zone. Brady doesn't give you an ideal dimension there because he's so immobile. He's so slow. Mm-hmm. It's hard to run those. I think we did talk about this on the show last week, actually. But you can do a lot with Tom Brady. So I'm a big Brady believer. I haven't come off the mountain of Brady's the GOAT yet. But I don't know if he fits that style of offense. Now, the Bucs do not play that style of offense. In fact, the Bucs are very north and south offense, running the ball and throwing the ball. So that would be a good fit there. And I still think if you're New England, why wouldn't you want him? If you have him back, you're the favorite in the AFC East again. You become a playoff team, and now you're relying on Tom Brady in the playoffs. That's not a bad formula to have.
Yeah. No, that's what I've said all along. And I don't know. It seems like some hurt feelings are factoring into this. And I don't know. We'll see how it goes. It seems like the Patriots are not offering a contract that would be viewed as respectful, is what it seems like.
What you mean is not enough money. Everybody says a contract's not respectful. He wants more money.
But that's the thing. It's never been about money for him. I mean, he took less money for years and years and years.
Fair.
Significantly less. I mean, he was playing for basically a 50% discount for years and years. And obviously, he can do that because of how long he's played and the fact that he's married to a woman who's worth, you know, whatever, 10 times he is. But, it seems like that's sort of a, you know.
Yeah, you're right. I withdraw my comment. You're right. In Brady's case, it probably actually isn't about money. Everybody else is saying, so it's just about the respect. And really, they mean the money, which is fine because that is a form of respect.
Couple miscellaneous here. Patriots retain Devin McCourty, which I think we all expected. He's still a good player, right, Andy?
Yes, he's still a very good player.
Leonard Williams gets the franchise tag. The Giants, you know, they gave up draft picks to get him, and they haven't worked out the deal yet.
Leonard Williams with the Giants, the whole, you know, they must see him as a defensive end, I guess. And that's because they're so rich in that position already. And to franchise tag him, they must see him as a defensive end. And to be fair, you know, he was very effective at times as a defensive end last year.
And we will wrap it up. Kirk Cousins gets it's a 2-year extension. So that means he won't be on the market this upcoming, or I shouldn't say upcoming, 1 year from now, he won't be available. But he'll be in Minnesota, and now Stefon Diggs. I mean, last we heard, Stefon Diggs is still tweeting sort of cryptic things about how he wants out of Minnesota. And we'll see if there's sort of a domino effect on this Kirk Cousins thing.
He does fit what Gary Kubiak does. That's let's keep that in mind. It's a very good scheme fit in Minnesota.
All right, Andy. I'm sure we're going to have lots more to talk about next week because this thing is just going full throttle at this point. But thanks again for joining us, and I feel this is just goodbye for now.
Gary, I appreciate you.
The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is me, Gary Gramling. Special thanks to Andy Benoit for joining me this week. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Ravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.